Hello, hello, what is up, and welcome to Off the Books, where we're surfing the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, and wherever else those waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the risk, reporting, and compliance platform that makes sense of all the tangled data problems your team deals with. Check it out at workiva.com/podcast. I'm Nick Rinkowski, and I'm your host. I'm not an accountant, but I like asking questions of people who are, so finance professionals can do their jobs better. To that end, we have a couple such professionals with us today. First, there's Steve Soder. Tell the people about yourself, Steve.
Certainly, Nick. Happy to be here. Hello, everyone. Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. I'm looking forward to debiting a great conversation today.
Me too, me too. And with us also today is Bob Hirth, Senior Managing Director at Protoviti. Tell us about yourself, Bob.
Sure. So, hey, Nick and Steve, it's good to be with you. So let me answer your question. So I'm originally from Chicago, so that's probably where I got my accent that you're listening to. I went to college in Texas at a school called Southern Methodist University. I've actually lived and worked in Melbourne, Australia for 3 years. And now I'm a little bit on the older side, but I've been in the San Francisco Bay Area for about 30 years. And as you mentioned, I'm a senior managing director at Protiviti. Protiviti is a global consulting firm. We have $1.3 billion in revenue. We operate in 25 countries. We serve 70% of the Fortune 1000. And we're actually a subsidiary of a public company, Robert Half International, which is listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
You're mentioning your experience, and we're going to want to talk a lot more about that and Protiviti. I want to hear all about that extensive experience as part of you being part of a number of impressive standards and advisory boards. Let's focus a little bit on that. I know that it's not just your professional work, but you're sitting on boards and being chairs of certain entities.
Sure. So there's really three pieces here, Nick. Let me start with the Arthur Andersen story. So I joined Arthur Andersen because I was an accounting major back when there were eight accounting firms. So we knew the big four as the big eight. Like many people, I started my career in the audit division. So I audited both private and public companies. And I worked in the Dallas office because I went to college there. I worked in a number of industries. Obviously, oil and gas was one of them, being in Texas, but I also worked in healthcare and some others. And then in 1988, I transferred to Melbourne, Australia to become a partner in Arthur Andersen. And I went to Melbourne to develop a healthcare consulting practice, which I did. After 3 years, I returned to the U.S. in 1991, and I continued doing public company audits. But then I got involved in the internal audit, co-sourcing, and outsourcing business. So that's a little bit about Arthur Andersen. When it comes to COSO, I became the COSO chair in June of 2013. So many listening in will remember that's the date about when the revised COSO internal control framework came out. And the way I like to describe that for all of you, you'll realize that's when COSO went from black and white to color. So all of you that love the COSO cube and the black and white cube, it went from that black and white version to the color version. And my job then when that came out was really to explain and market that revised framework all around the world. And of course, that revised framework, which I know you all love, became the operable framework to use when doing Sarbanes-Oxley Section 404 work. During my tenure as the chair at COSO, we also revised the Enterprise Risk Management Framework, and that was issued and released in 2017. And again, I explained and marketed that document all around the world. And then lastly, I initiated COSO's guidance on how do you consider these ESG factors that we're talking about today into the COSO Enterprise Risk Management Framework, and we jointly published that document with an organization called the WBCSD. So let me explain that. It's the World Business Council on Sustainable Development. So that's the COSO story.
And you'll have to forgive me, Bob, as the non-accountant, COSO stands for?
So COSO stands for the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations, and I know we got a question teed up, so I'll give you a little bit more explanation of that.
Okay.
But the acronym is COSO, C-O-S-O.
Perfect.
And then therefore, thirdly, the SASB story is I joined the board of the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, known as SASB, in January of 2017. We actually had only one board then, and we created two boards. We modeled ourselves after the FASB. So everybody on the call I know believes in FASB. It's the church of the accounting profession. So we mirrored ourselves in a sense in name, but also in structure, like the FASB. So we have a foundation board that addresses the operations and funding of what SASB does. And we have a standards board now that I'm on that comprises 11 people, that is the board that ultimately reviews and approves all of the SASB industry-specific standards that come out. So that's the Arthur Andersen COSO SASB story for Bob Hirth.
And I need to jump in here, Nick, and this is going to probably make Bob slightly uncomfortable. Bob Hirth is a pretty big deal. I have vivid memories of the COSO framework. Certainly am familiar with SASB. And honestly, Bob, it is a pleasure and a real treat, frankly, for us and our listeners to have you on the podcast. I feel like the career progression that you just laid out is really interesting. It's a little bit different. Most accountants don't make it to some kind of standard setting organizations, I should say. And I know that specifically the COSO and the SASB aren't regulators. We would think of it for the Securities Exchange Commission, for example. But can you tell us and our audience a little more about what these organizations do, why their role is so important within the context of the profession generally?
Sure, certainly. No, these are in a way two very different organizations, but there's some similarities that I'll cover. And I think the real similarity is both organizations are trying to help, I'll say, any kind of organization do something better. So let's take COSO. First of all, COSO, believe it or not, is actually not a legal entity. It's considered a joint initiative, and we have five sponsors. So those sponsors are the AICPA, the IIA, the Institute of Internal Auditors, the IMA, the Institute of Management Accountants, FEI, which stands for Financial Executives International, and what we call the AAA, the American Accounting Association, which is the membership organization for university accounting professors. So all five of those organizations are there to support this notional thing called COSO. And Nick, to your point, it's the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations of the Treadway Commission. Treadway is the last name of Mr. Jim Treadway, who back in the 70s and 80s was a commissioner at the SEC. And so the reason COSO got started because of a problem. Back in the early 80s and late 70s, there was some bad financial reporting, and people were aghast at that. And everyone asked, where were the accountants? Where were the auditors? And this group of five organizations got together and said, this is very embarrassing. We need to do something. So they stepped back and said, we need to do some study as to why these things happened. And back then, they usually selected some kind of blue ribbon type person. So they asked Mr. Treadway to study the problem of this bad reporting and what could be done. And what he ultimately concluded was there needed to be effective internal controls at organizations to stop these problems. So that's COSO. It's not an entity. It has these five sponsors. The focus of COSO then is on internal control. It's also on risk management and really covering both of those items as the topic of governance. So what COSO has done is we have a couple of frameworks, one on internal control, one on risk management. And many people know that the internal control framework is actually the criteria used to conclude that you have effective internal control over financial reporting. So that's a little bit about COSO. And I'd urge everybody to go to COSO.org. The executive summaries of the frameworks are available for free. We have a series of thought leadership papers. And again, for the topic we're talking about today, the guidance that we issued with the WBCSD on ESG and ERM, the executive summary and the full guidance is actually available for free, again, at COSO.org. Now let's talk about SASB. So SASB is actually a legal entity. It's a not-for-profit entity. It's a 501c3. It's headquartered in San Francisco. It was formed in about 2010. As I mentioned, it's modeled after the FASB. So we have a foundation board that addresses funding and overall governance, a standards board, which is 11 people that ultimately reviews and approves the standards that are published by SASB. We have a staff of about 40 people, mostly in San Francisco and some in New York and some in Washington, D.C. And what SASB has done, it has developed industry-specific, at least for now, voluntary sustainability-related reporting standards that we think start out with the notion that they are financially likely to be a material item, that they're investor useful, that if an investor had that information, they would make a decision one way or the other, and ultimately they're market informed. And what we mean by that is the standards are based upon lots of discussion with both investors who want the information and by what we call companies or issuers who have to provide the information. And much like the FASB, we have a conceptual framework as to how we do our work and a set of rules of procedures. And all of our standard setting process is subject to a 90-day public comment period. And again, like COSO, please go to SASB.org. And in fact, because our standards are industry specific, if you click on the standards tab and you type in your ticker symbol or the name of a company, it will show you what particular industry and sector your company maps to. And then you can actually download the specific, I'll say for now, suggested voluntary sustainability reporting standards for your particular company. SASB's really become, I think in the last couple of years, a very fast-growing example of sustainability reporting. I think the growth in use of SASB was over 300% last year in terms of the number of companies. So I'd urge all of you again to go to SASB.org for more information.
Okay, we will be right back with Bob Hirth of Protivity, but first we need to hear from our sponsor. And this episode of Off the Books is brought to you by Workiva, the reporting platform that believes in the power of innovation. Most companies claim they believe in innovation as well, but too often they fall back on old thinking and tired processes. When confronted with new ideas, especially when it comes to operations, they retreat to the way it has always been, like a moth drawn to the flame. By the way, moths aren't actually attracted to flames or light bulbs or any kind of artificial light. They are confused by them. For 190 million years, the only source of light for a moth has been the sun or the moon, so you can imagine how disorienting it was for them to find these weird humans with their small personal suns cropping up everywhere about a million years ago. They navigate straight flight patterns by the sun and the moon, and lights totally throw them off. However, you and I know that innovations like artificial light are great for reading indoors, exploring caves, and playing evening baseball games. So just like Workiva, which automates reporting processes that have always been manual and makes it easier for teams to collaborate remotely, innovation is about rejecting what was for what could be. So, is your organization made of moths or men? Don't be confused by the future. Embrace it at Workiva.com. WORKIVA.com.
You are certainly our blue ribbon guest today. If I'm hearing you right, you're saying that these aren't regulatory boards, but they're resources for accounting teams and finance teams of all kinds, just to help them get better.
You could argue that COSO is a de facto regulator in that
sure.
Its framework was never designed to be that, but when SOX came out, as I like to say, it was a hammer looking for a nail. So as the SEC told 5,000 public companies to do the same thing, which is report on internal control, how do you do that? And you usually do that with some checklist set of guidance framework. And they really searched around and said, aha, the COSO framework is the guidance, is the scaffolding that really every company should use. So in a way, once they alluded to the notion that COSO was out there, it became de facto the standard for everybody to use. And today I would say 99%+ of all public companies that report for SOX use the COSO framework. There are a couple of other internal control frameworks that can be used, but generally it's all COSO all the way.
Bob, I know we've got a lot to talk about here relative to ESG and a few other things, but your career progression is so interesting. And I'm just wondering, if somebody wanted to end up at a perhaps a regulator or a standard setter, what was it about your career that enabled you to do this? Again, you'll be embarrassed when I say this, but you're a bit of a rock star. Yeah, how did this all come together?
See, that's a good question. So first of all, if I was going to give you some advice, is you have to do a good job at job one. So whatever job you're doing, so you're in the audit division of Arthur Andersen or you're at a company, you have to have a good level of performance there. You can't just say, well, I'm not doing well there, so let me do this thing. So first of all, you have to have good performance in what you're being asked to do. I think secondly, you want to be sure that you're progressing in your career, that you're asking for more opportunity and stretching yourself. You have nothing to lose to ask for more responsibility or to move into new things. And I think something I also learned is whenever there's something new, and ESG is an example, or COSO can be an example, whenever anything's new, you can be the expert. So what I'd encourage you to do as these new things come up, dig in and get going. So I think what happened with COSO is, you know, I had a background at Arthur Andersen and Protiviti and doing this internal audit work and internal control. Now, I actually also happen to serve two terms on the standing advisory group of the PCAOB, which didn't hurt. But I think I just had an interest. The other idea is, if you don't ask, you don't get, and you have to understand when there's nothing to lose. So I kind of got interested in this COSO thing, and I called the chairman, who I did and didn't know, Dave Lansittle, and said, "Dave, what's it like to be the chairman of COSO? Do you like it?" And he told me about it. And then he said, "By the way, I'm going to be ending my term. We're looking for a new chairman. Why don't you apply?" So my view is, I had nothing to lose but to try. And they told the COSO board it was an honor to even be interviewed for the job. And my whole mindset then was, if I didn't get the job, it was still a great opportunity. So take some chances, and especially where you know you have nothing to lose, go for it. SASB, same thing. I ride a road bike, was riding with a friend of mine. He had applied for a position at SASB. He didn't get it. I looked it up. It sounded kind of strange. I found out who the founder was. I just sent her a note because my friend said they were looking for board members. I said to Gene Rogers, "Gene, this is my background and who I am. I know you're looking for board members. You have to absolutely choose who the right people are for that. But would you like to meet?" We had lunch. We talked. She called me back and asked me to be on the board. So again, I had nothing to lose to reach out to her. Now, I think what, to your point, Steve, the background I had was really helpful, right? It really fit like a glove. But a couple things. Do a good job. Do lots of things. Stretch yourself. Learn. When there's something new, become an expert at it, and just give it a try.
Simple to understand, hard to execute on sometimes, but you mentioned something new that we're trying to become an expert on, and that's why we spend a lot of time on Off the Books talking about ESG, environmental, social, and corporate governance. I want to get your perspective on ESG, Bob.
Yeah, so right now it is all the rage. It's a hot topic. It's top of mind, whatever. Let me try to explain why that's going on. So for many years, we've had investors who've used financial statements, and they've been considered a stakeholder, but we have more and more stakeholders today. We have employees are stakeholders, customers are stakeholders, suppliers are stakeholders, the communities we operate in are stakeholders, and all of those stakeholders want information about the company. And to date, that main source of information have been the financial statements. But what all these stakeholders are now saying is, I've got the financial statements, but financial performance alone is not adequate. I need more information. I need information about these E, S, and G factors. So for example, what kind of natural resources do you use? Where do you get them? How much do they cost? Is there going to be a change in the price of those resources? Around the S piece, how do you treat employees and suppliers? What are your turnover rates? For example, if you're an apparel manufacturer, I'd like to know if you use child labor, or how you know you don't use child labor. And then for everybody on the call, the G piece, the governance piece, is probably the more fully baked area. We already know about those pieces are, which is the board, its composition, the background of the board members, the reporting the company goes through, its transparency, audits, complying with regulations, etc. So what's really happened is we have more stakeholders now that are interested in these companies, all with different and more needs for information. So that's what's really happening. With a lot of people involved, they're concerned about these companies and these E, S, and G factors they believe are extremely important, and they need information on that. And the financial statements are no longer enough information for them.
So it's just a call for an expansion of transparency.
Yeah. And I would say, again, for people on the call, I'd like to say the scope of corporate reporting has now expanded permanently. To me, there's no question that in addition to the financial reporting that they've been involved in and we've had for decades, this additional ESG reporting is here to stay. It's going to continue to develop and evolve over at least the next number of years. And this reporting, because it now becomes part of corporate reporting, is going to be something many or most of the traditional financial reporting functions are going to get involved in, because in my view, they are the reporting experts.
Well, Bob, I've been spending some time just in the ESG ecosystem generally, and it does occur to me how much of a new, almost tidal wave this appears to be. And I ask this question, given your background, Sarbanes-Oxley had a dramatic impact on the profession in general. Is it your belief that ESG could be that same thing or as dramatically, you know, impactful as Sarbanes-Oxley was to the profession? Is that what we should look forward to?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, Steve, it is. If you think about it, pre-Sarbanes-Oxley, right? We just had getting the numbers in the financial statements right and the reporting or the assurance on that. We now have this concept of internal control over that financial reporting, right? And the third-party assurance that goes with that. And so, yes, I think now it's going to happen. We already do have ESG reporting. We can argue if it's accurate right now or not. And ultimately, I believe we're going to have assurance over that ESG reporting as well. Is it going to be cataclysmic? I don't know. But is it going to be substantial and important and significant and a piece of people's work going forward? Absolutely.
We'll look forward to exciting times.
And exciting times they will be, but they will have to wait until next week when we will have the conclusion of our conversation with Bob Hirth of Protivity. Until then, this has been Nick Rinkowski, and this has been Off the Book. So please subscribe, leave an Apple Podcast review, or tell your buddies if you like the show, or if you want to be on the show, or you want to tell us how wrong we are about the show. You can do all of that if you write us at offthebooks@workiva.com. Please join us next week for the conclusion of our ESG conversation. Otherwise, surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.